Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales through Diamond to retailers in North America for July 2016. This is what is invoiced to retailers. It is not end reader sales. It's not what went out the door. It's really what went in. And I want to stress it's what was invoiced. And let's be a little clear on that this month, because we've got returnable comics. These seem to be getting reported at 80%. Of the full amount to account for reorders, eventually reorders factor in. This is the same thing we had last month, and we're going to see kind of both sides of that equation this time around. We had a record-breaking month in June, and just to make things really interesting, we had another record-breaking month here in July. Last time, we had 8,531,976 units. For the top 300 units for the top comics. This time we had 8,581,015 units. That's a difference of a little over 49,000, 49,039 to be exact, unit difference between the two. Now this is, again, second high water mark for the total units for the top 300 comics 2 months in a row.
Yeah.
Now, it could be that we've finally gotten comics fully accepted. People understand they are wonderful properties, and they're just flocking to stores in record numbers. Or this just could be a little bit of a bubble because of Rebirth, because of Civil War II, Dumb Luck, Phase of Moon, you know, whatever. I think it's a little of both. Now, last time what was interesting is there was a lot of unreported units. Underreported units, let me be clear on that, because of the returnability. Again, we've got that here, but we'll look at that in a second. Right now, if we look at the breakdown of the top 300 comics, 45.83% of the units went to DC. This does not happen often, with them having the largest share of the pie. Marvel had 37.35% of the units, and Image had 6.23% of the units. Now, 11 times out of 12 or thereabouts, Marvel's the top dog. Yep. So for DC to have done it by, 700,000 plus, 730,000 plus or so thereabouts?
Yep.
Roughly 730,000. That's pretty impressive.
It is, until you keep going. Arguably, they're still number two.
The other way to look at the top 300 is by dollars, at which point... Marvel had the largest with 42.63% of the total dollars for the top 300 comics at retail. DC had 39.58% and Image 5.9%.
And let's just remind people that is full retail. So it assumes all distributors / resellers receive the exact same discount on all items from all publishers, which is not necessarily true.
Yeah, there's a certain aspect of the percentage by dollars.
That's kind of...
It's almost, I don't want to say imaginary, but it's...
It's first, made up to some degree. You're not made up, that's not fair.
It's not made up, but it is a squishy metric.
Yeah, it's based on incomplete information, to say the least.
Yeah, well, it's based on complete information, it's just irrelevant to the business.
Well, yes, it's incomplete in the fact that you don't know what discount percentages are, you don't know how many stores are each discount percentage, you don't factor in what the discount percentage is for the different publishers, yada, yada, yada.
Yes, I agree with all of that. My point is, because we don't have that data, we can't give a more meaningful metric, and the metric we have, while complete because we know the full retail cost and we know the number of units, is meaningless because of everything you just said.
Yes. Yes. The complete information that we have is meaningless because of the incomplete information that we don't have.
Exactly. Exactly. It's an interesting metric, but it's not a one that really is of that much empirical use in terms of day-to-day, you know, operations or really serious assessment of the industry. Now, likewise, the percentage of the total units for the top comics is a similarly squishy metric, because while we know the total number of units for the top 300, we know how many units went to each publisher. That percentage is obscuring the fact that the pie is changing in size. You know,
not only is it obscuring that, it, as we've seen with a few oddball one-off things, one really, really strong book can change that. Even if you take out the fact that the size of the pie is changing,
mm-hmm.
I would argue it is very different to have 15% of the market consistently than it is to get, you know, 15% of the market one month and be back down to under 1% of the market every other month.
Well, I agree. Likewise, it would be a very different case to have a publisher that, say, got 5% because all of their titles are doing, you know, a certain amount each on average, and it added up to that, versus one month they get 5% because they had one thing that went through Loot Crate or something else and just flooded the market, and it's non-representative.
We saw that a few about a year ago now with, it was a Boom that did
Orphan Black.
Orphan Black, exactly.
Yes. We've also seen it with, like, Rocket Raccoon over at Marvel. We don't seem to be seeing it as much these days, and I'm not sure if that's just because they've kind of decided not to include that in these numbers or exactly what's going on. Because, I mean, I'm still getting a number of these subscription boxes and still getting a fair number of variant covers and stuff. Although, in fairness, a lot of these are variant covers of older comics versus current month type stuff.
Well, then you'd expect weird reorder numbers.
I don't know that they would really I don't know if they consider that reorder or if it's just, in their mind, kind of a new item or something, but either way, it's not showing up.
Yeah.
Because I was just reading an article that was indicating that Loot Crate is moving like 650,000 boxes a month. Now, keep in mind, they've added like an anime box, a gaming box, a this, that, and the other box. So I don't know if that, how their Loot Crate exactly, that particular item is selling. But it was at least the 100,000 mark at one point and was a definite, you know, not just move the needle, but sometimes peg the needle kind of a impact on sales. But the size of the pie, I mean, there's a very different amount of, the discussion came up on the forum, and the analogy I used was, you know, 25% of a 10-inch pizza is less pizza than 25% of, say, a 14 or 18-inch pizza. Now, just to be clear, I'm talking gluten-free, casein-free pizza, just so I can enjoy it too for everybody. But, you know, the percentage is the size of the wedge, but it's how big is that pizza in general makes a difference. And this is one where, again, not only did DC have the largest number of units by percentage, they just had a ton of units. But what's interesting is they had, and this goes back to, again, percentages, etc., they had 45.83% of the total units for the top 300 in July, which equated to 3,932,978 units. Last month, Marvel had 47% of the pie, higher percentage, and had over 4 million units because it was a slightly smaller pie. You know, it's... actually, I guess both the percentage and the units are higher in that case. Never mind. But it's one of those things where you get the right example and you can have a higher percentage and a lower number.
Yeah. There's actually a very funny viral video I've seen fairly recently. A gentleman talking to supposedly his fiance about ordering a pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's funny because you use pizza. Yeah, you go down to the pizza store and you order a 14-inch pizza. And then they say, how many slices do you want it cut into? 8 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? She says, well, I say 8 because I can eat 8 slices of pizza. I can't eat 12. And he tries to, but it's the same size pizza, right? Well, yeah, but I can't eat 12 slices.
Yeah. There's the count of the slices. It's like, you know, making change for somebody.
Yes.
And it's like, I've got a quarter. Can you give me 2 dimes? Because 2 is more than 1.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're doing the math wrong. But there are times where it's really easy to do the math wrong.
Yeah.
So the fact that this was just, again, 49,000 units above last month, which was record-breaking and stuff, it really, that's kind of a mid-list title difference, which isn't that much. But what's interesting is while the breakdown of the top 20 was fascinating this month.
I could not agree more. I think, I don't know, you want to start and talk about it, because I think there are some odd things in the top 20.
I don't want to start at the number one real quick. I want to jump to two other items.
Okay, fair enough.
Let's start with rank number 4 and 7.
Okay.
Rank number 4 was Civil War II, number 3.
Yep.
176,876 units, which is actually up about 19.19% over the total sales of the previous issue.
Yeah, it's about 28,000 units higher.
Yeah. And then at rank 7, we've got issue number 4 of Civil War II. And it did 126,865 units, which is about 28.27% less than that issue 3 we just talked about. And that's a drop of about, what, 50,000 plus?
Yes, but only a drop of about 23 from issue 2.
Let me pull up the total sales history for this thing real quick.
Yeah, I've got it. It doesn't look that different.
Well, what's funny is because the Zero issue was by a different creative team.
Yeah, forget that one.
It was about 184,000. Then we get the true number 1 at around 182,000-ish almost.
No, 380.
Oh, 380. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm misreading that. I really need to get my eyes checked, I think. We learn how to read numbers. You'd think after doing this nearly 10 years, I'd have that down. But then issue number 2 did around 148,000, 149,000. Issue 3 then goes back up to the 176,000, 177,000. And then 4 back down to kind of the quote-unquote new low point for this, which is still around 127,000 units. So it's got definite peaks and valleys, which is just kind of crazy. And man, if you look at the retail dollars, it goes from, 918,000 on that Zero issue to 2.2, almost 2.3 million on the first issue, and then down to 750,000 on the second, and then up a little and down a little. I get the yo-yo type thing. But that's decent swing on issues 3 and 4. And I'm not sure how much of that was due to crazy variants, or stuff like that. Let me see, was there any reorder activity? There was no reorder activity on any of the previous issues this month.
Not on any of the previous ones, but I do have a hypothesis/question about it. The number 3 issue shipped early in the month, extremely early, July 6th.
That is definitely an excellent point. There, because the 4th issue shipped on the last week of the month,
mm-hmm.
It had no time for in-month reorders.
And then the other thing I want to point out is several of the things above it and several other items that made the top 20 ship that same week, whereas the next item from that same final week on the list is much lower.
Yeah, what, rank 10 or 11 thereabouts?
Yeah.
And that's actually something really worth talking about. It was a 4-week July. August is going to be a 5-week thing. The way this list works, which makes it a little skewed in favor of certain things, you can game the system if you know how and you really want to, although why?
But it's clear they kind of do want to.
I
haven't figured out why, but seemingly we've seen things done that appear specifically designed to game this reporting system.
I don't think it's across the board. I think that's more from Marvel than DC.
I would agree with that. I would also say some other publishers.
That's true. I think DC...
Back to that Orphan Black book. Ton of press releases about how well they did that month and the huge percentage and all of that.
Absolutely. There's a certain amount of... However you got the position you got, milk it for all it's worth.
Yes.
DC does not seem to be really chasing after gaming this report, and I think that's reflective both of a little bit more of a longer-term strategy they tend to have and more of, frankly, I don't say a business mindset than a marketing mindset, but I think the companies that tend to be trying to game the system are the ones that are a bit more kind of marketing savvy, would probably be a polite way of saying it. But there are shenanigans that can be done.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's not technically a shenanigan but is a way to game the system is this report is giving the total invoiced amount for the month. Now, if you release on the first week of the month, there are then at least 3 other weeks retailers could get additional copies if they need them or if there's a delay or whatever. Now, obviously, that means there's more time for those things to sell and get more units through the system, than if the same comic were to come out on the last Wednesday of the month, and you got what you got. You got shorted, you got shorted. That's how come sometimes with, we've seen this once in a while on like Usagi Yojimbo or a few other things, where it looks like suddenly the numbers just cut in half. And then what we'd see the next month is on the first week, the other half of those units.
Yeah, and we've seen that very commonly from small titles like Yasagi to big titles. I mean, there have been big event books where there have been a significant number of reorders the next month, and some of them are legitimately reorders, and some of them are probably something, you know, more along those lines of stores just didn't get them in time to be invoiced that first month.
It's almost as if one of the Diamond distribution centers did not get them in time to send out.
Yeah.
And because it was the last week of the month, it shows up on the next month's numbers. You know, that's just the way the thing works. And I don't know that there's necessarily a better way for the numeric reporting to be done on this. Because a week-to-week chart would certainly level that out and be very interesting. And it would also give visibility as to, you know, how much it would give visibility into how much of the in-month reorder activity there was. And without knowing that, it's hard to know how would that radically change the reporting process or not. And if it meant I was doing the number crunching and podcasting on this every week, I would definitely not be in favor of that. I mean, from a number junkies, I'd love it. Don't get me wrong. But just from the workload aspect, it's hard enough to keep up with this.
Yes.
So I definitely think we may see reorder activity on 4 because it was last week of the month, but who knows.
The fact that the number 2 and 3 books also came out that same week. I mean, the number 2nd and 3rd ranked books on the list came out the same week as Civil War number 2, which was ranked number 4. Could also part of the reason that book sold better, but again, they'd have to know this ahead of time, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, the reason I wanted to talk about the two Civil War 2 ones first, as I'm sure you've noticed, they're the only two Marvel books in the top 20. Matter of fact, you've got to go down to rank 23 to get to the next Marvel book.
Yep.
Everything else in the top 20 is a DC comic. Everything in the top 16 is over 100,000. So, you know, this is, again, Rebirth kicking into full swing and definitely making a difference here. If we start at the top of the list now, most of the DC, matter of fact, every DC book we're going to hit down, well, really every DC book, I think, in the top 40, was returnable. So we're going to have what was reported and then another, you know, the additional 20% knockdown, if you will, to get it down to the 80% of the total invoiced amount. They reported 80% of that. That's what I'm trying to say. I had a hard time with this last month, too. Surely there's a good way to say this that I'll figure out eventually, probably in about 2 months when they really stop doing all the returnable books as often. Justice League number 1. Did in top place, was reported at 209,187 units. I would say the unreported units were around 52,297 for a grand total of about 461,484. So any of those numbers, other than the additional what they didn't report, you know, be it 209 or 261,000, it's crazy good numbers. And unsustainable crazy good numbers.
But still significantly lower than the leading Rebirth number 1, if you exclude Universe Rebirth, which was last month's number 2, which was Batman number 1, which came in at 280. And this is at 209.
I think that's a little bit of a reflection of how those two titles did during the New 52.
Yep.
Justice League started hot but cooled off, and I think that cool off is part of what hurt this. What's interesting is the number 2 item is the Rebirth issue of Justice League at 177,638 units, which is, you know, what, 30,000 plus units behind.
Yep.
And I really think these Rebirth issues are kind of neither fish nor fowl. They're, you know, again, we get zero issues that are true essential lead-ins to the story and some that are just cash grabs. And it was hard to know ahead of time and even sometimes after the fact which category some of these Rebirths fell into.
They were also confusing. As I've mentioned, since Rebirth, I've kind of gone to a digital model.
Mm-hmm.
I'm buying most of my books digitally. Nice and easy to figure out which one's which. I happened to be in my comic shop this past week on Wednesday. Boy, is it not clear which one's the Rebirth number one and which one's the number one.
I agree entirely. I think that is wildly confusing trade dress, and it. I think it was a huge mistake.
I don't know if it was a mistake. Yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but yes, it is confusing.
In this day and age of variant covers.
Yeah, that's also true.
Two things that look like they're both, you know, Justice League number one, Rebirth, or DC Universe Rebirth, Justice League number one, or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't need both. I just get one of them. It's one's a variant cover, isn't it? Well, no. You know, it's funny, things that seem abundantly clear to some people are just wildly confusing to others. I used to have a coworker on my last job that it took him forever to realize that the Ultimate titles were their own different universe over at Marvel. I mean, how are you to know? Similar trade dress. I mean, there are signs that I picked up on and understood, but I'd also been reading the press releases back when the line started and stuff like that. If you come in late in the game where everyone just knows this, or you don't, and you don't, it's like, yeah.
Well, especially when they started reusing other adjectives. When the Ultimate Universe started, it was simple. If mm-hmm. it said Ultimate, it was Ultimate Universe, and most other things didn't have an adjective, or if they did, it was one adjective, and it was only used on that book, and it was long. You know, Amazing Spider-Man, Uncanny X-Men, Invincible Iron Man, you just accept it.
Incredible Hulk, Mighty Thor, that's just part of the title.
Exactly.
And has been for decades.
But then when they started doing, you know, other Invincibles, other Amazings, other Uncannies, you know, there's Uncanny Avengers, and then it got much more confusing. You could think Ultimate was just an adjective like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his confusion predates that adjective conundrum, but the point is, regardless, it's confusing.
Yeah.
And the more confusing you make it to buy the stuff, the less you deserve to have it bought. So yeah, I think the way they're doing the trade dress with Rebirth puts in a needless level of confusion.
Yeah.
And I think there's also the confusion of how essential are these to read? Are they just a gap filling issue, or are they pivotal?
And there's ones that felt pivotal, there's ones that felt gap filling, and the two at the top of the list, to me personally, felt like the worst of both sides, which was pivotal, but out of order.
So, Justice League Rebirth, which category are you putting that in?
Essential, or not essential, but important-ish. You could argue it's part of the story.
Yeah.
But you can also argue it's out of order. There are signs, when you read those two books in the order they were released, it would appear that the events of Rebirth happen after the events of number one.
Possibly which even came after out, the events of number two.
Exactly, which came out after, and somewhere on the forum when these issues came out, I kind of did a post mentioning that.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's confusing, because there's characters meeting in the Rebirth that clearly had met or hadn't met after the number, it was weird.
Right now, the DC Universe has a similar aspect that it had after Crisis on Infinite Earths, where things just hadn't really firmly solidified in the way of the continuity, and it was just a little confusing as to, wait, what's the status quo for this person? Do they know each other? Have they known each other forever? Are they just now meeting? What's going on? And that kind of confusion, and I'm definitely feeling that in a couple of places in the current DC Rebirth stuff.
But in Justice League in particular, now that I've read, you know, all of them are out to this point, it really feels like you said Rebirth is either 1.5 or 2.5. Why didn't it just come out in that spot as opposed to first?
Yeah. You know, what was the point of that Rebirth? Right now, I would say the Superman Rebirth was a very almost necessary pivot point for the character, the title, that whole franchise.
It could have been in the end of...
One could argue it should have been the end of the previous story arc. Yes. But it was at least clearly...
It was an introduction. If you skipped the previous arc, it was an introduction to the current world.
It served as an end cap of one story and the prologue of the next.
Yes. It was also the prologue to Action, Not Superman, which I think was another weird choice. It should have been Action Rebirth, but that's a whole different issue.
Fair point, too. I just think there's, like I said, some confusion as to what was the purpose of these things. Yeah. How were we supposed to interpret them? Some have worked better for me than others.
Yeah, no, some I've enjoyed, some I haven't. But there's a second level of why did this fit come out at this time, regardless of whether I enjoyed it or not. There's some confusion there as well.
Yeah. Ranks number 3 and 5 are Batman number 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Number 2 did 177,105 units. That's down 41.79% from the really, really high sales of the first issue.
That arguably is... I mean, that's a Marvel-esque second-issue drop that we don't normally see with DC.
Yes, I agree with that. But we also don't normally see sales of first month for Batman number 1, the 280,000-plus, and it was, I think, another 25,000 reorder activity down on the list.
Yes, yeah, because the number that 41 is lower than is 304.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like you said, lower than the 280 from last month.
So... The 280 was underreported potentially by, I think, 70,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
And we did 23,884 units of reorder activity on Batman number 1 down at rank number 97. So we're kind of chipping away at that 70,000 considerably.
Yes. Which leads to the next question of, are they all showing up? Was that additional reorders and they haven't put the returnable numbers back in? Or... are those stores that have said, hey, we're not returning these? I don't know.
I don't have the answer to that. I am taking it to be compensation for... it's on top of the 280, not on the top of the 350.
Okay.
In other words, it's on top of the marked, the lower level reporting they did.
Yeah. Which answers a question we kind of had last month is, will those numbers eventually show up as reorder in future months? And at this point, it's seeming like that's entirely possible. Based on all the reorders from those DC number ones this month on this list.
And we've got a lot of that reorder activity.
Yeah, we do. Well, not 19, something, 18, 19 issues, but yes.
It's still a lot of reorder activity and strong reorder activity. Not just a few thousand here and there.
Yeah, no, that is true.
15, 20, you know, 25,000-ish or whatever. Yep. It's like, yeah. Batman number 3 dropped another 4.61%. Putting it down at 168,938 units, which is still wildly successful. So the 41% drop on the second issue, is that Marvel-esque? Yeah. Is that worrisome? No.
Yeah, because 177 is still probably not sustainable, but it's at least in the realm of possibly near sustainable. It went down to 177, down to 168. I mean, this book could stay at 140 for a few months. It could. I'm not saying it will. I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility.
And certainly for the first story arc of the first couple of issues, yes, I agree with that. You know, we saw how well it did on the previous volume. This volume has started off strong. So, I mean, to me, the drop on that second issue is not something to worry about. The fact the third issue was so minor is as much of a reflection of when these things were solicited two at a time. This is something that we're going to see a little bit of stair-stepping, because on the fourth issue of Batman, which was solicited a month after the third issue, retailers have a month's worth of additional information and feedback from their customer base.
What I would love to get your opinion on is, for years we've been saying Marvel's the more popular publisher, which I tend to agree with overall, and that's not changing. However, the fact that Batman 2 and 3 bookended Civil War number 3, and both ahead of Civil War number 4, is that an indication that Batman as a character is more popular than either publisher, per se?
I think there are certain characters that are, I don't say in and of themselves a major franchise or something, but are fundamentally on a different level than most other characters.
I agree, and I've argued for years about 5 or 6 of them. But Batman is starting to put itself in a place that's even above those. Yeah, Superman's not close. Spider-Man's not close. Batman's on his own level at this point.
I think there's which characters are in this upper stratosphere of popularity or whatever varies a little from decade to decade, year to year or whatever.
Yep.
Batman has almost always been there, though.
Yeah.
So that gives him a certain advantage over most other characters.
And arguably, he's number one most of those decades as well.
Well, you know, I think there's kind of a reason that Diamond uses the top-selling Batman title as the 100% mark for the index ranking.
Yeah.
Everything literally on the chart is in reference to how Batman sold. And it's more meaningful to do that when you've got kind of something at the top of the list than saying, well, everything sold, you know, multiple times this pile of garbage that may get canceled because it's so low or something. You know, you're not going to pick, you know, low-level title du jour.
Well, the two easiest numbers to use are something that's at the top or something that's at the bottom.
But at the bottom, is it going to be there next month to use? Is the
Yes, then you have to change what you're using every month. But yes, obviously the easiest way to do this would be pick the item at the very top of the list or the item at the very bottom of the list. And, you know.
And nine times out of ten, in the one most likely to be up at the top of the list or in that range is Batman.
Yeah, no, exactly. They picked one that's almost always guaranteed to be in the top 10.
Now, what was interesting is at Capital City, the other distributor for the longest time, other major distributor.
Use X-Men?
Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah.
Kind of the flagship book over at Marvel at the time when they were setting the index. So, yeah. I mean, why it was these things were picked makes sense.
And at least Batman continued pretty much unabated. Can you imagine having to switch that index number on whatever the X title of the month is these days?
Well, and there have been a couple of months there was no Batman title.
Yeah, so they went to Detective, and then there's that weird where they went to the when there was neither
Battle of the Cowl or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
When Dick was Batman number. Well, I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything because it's three continuities ago, but.
Well, there was a period where they were debating who was going to be Batman, who was going to get the Batman cowl, and so there was no Batman or Detective that month. There was just that miniseries.
Yep.
They picked that. It's like what gets me is not when they one of the ramifications of switching from Batman to Detective or Batman to this sort of a miniseries or whatever, or when Batman undergoes a radical change in creative team, is you now have a different sales level for Batman, which means even if everything else is selling the same, their index point values will change radically.
Yes.
You know, the value of whatever this 100% mark is fluctuates wildly from month to month.
Oh, of course.
You know, sometimes by a 2-to-1 margin from one month to the next. Not often, but enough to if you just look at the percentages, which is what the index is, it's meaningless. You know, ooh, it's got a higher index. It must have sold more. No, not necessarily. I'm going to be curious to see where this Batman title kind of gravitates towards when it levels off.
I am too.
Because I think the twice monthly shipping can really help story momentum. It runs the risk of burning people out. I think this title's not going to fall victim to that, though. It's just, do we see stair-stepping based on the solicitation month of the issues with the first of the two maybe doing a little better than the second of the two per solicitation month or whatever? And just how do retailers kind of do this? And does it matter if a story arc starts in the second issue of a month or the first issue of a month?
And it's an odd, I will say this, so far it's an odd Batman title.
There are aspects of the pacing of the story I find interesting in terms of a little more time's elapsed between issues than I would have expected. I'm liking the story, but
But to be fair, I've been saying that about Batman for close to a decade.
At this point, then, it should no longer be odd. It should be normal for you.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. But having grown up in the Denny O'Neil Bat office, ever since he left, there's been a definite change.
I will admit to having a certain love-hate relationship with the Denny O'Neil Batman office. And part of this is just bitterness on my part. Certainly, Denny O'Neil had a wonderful love of the character, an understanding of the character. And the titles that were produced by that office, they picked good creators. They had some fun stuff. There was some wildly great reads and runs during that time. So they certainly knew what they were doing. But I also, early on, and it may have been before he was in charge of the Bat office, but I had submitted a Batman story.
Okay.
It was turned down with some very cryptic notes along the lines of, yeah, we've got other plans for this character. And I'm like, well, that's fine. The character really made a cameo appearance in my story. It was not the least bit essential, and it could have been replaced with almost any other Batman villain at that point. That's why you're turning... It was one of those, they didn't give me any useful feedback.
Interesting. Hey, they took the time to read it, which they would no longer do.
True. I just
legally, they can't almost take the time to do anymore.
I just didn't feel they read it well.
Well, like I said, the fact that they read it at all is, in modern terms, is a miracle.
I may send you a copy of it.
Sure.
Because there were aspects of it that I felt got used later. Not to say they stole it, because I think...
Which is the great fear of reading them, which is why they don't read unsolicited scripts anymore.
And that's part of why I wanted to clarify that, is I think there are certain ideas that sooner or later everybody's going to have for certain characters.
Yeah.
Whether I had them first or not. You know, it's just, that's familiar. Anyways, next on the list at rank 6, Nightwing Rebirth number 1, 127,845 units. A couple of units down below that, we've got the actual number 1 issue of Nightwing, 114,787 units. This is a case where the Rebirth sold better than the number 1.
Yep.
And we're seeing, you know, again, it's going both ways.
Dick's an interesting character. Clearly, there's a great love of that character. Or, you know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, there's a great love of that character. Even though I would argue the character is wildly inconsistent. Or at least has been for the last 10 to 15 years.
Yes, because I think some of the creators they put on the title have a very different take than what I think makes the character wildly popular.
Yes.
It's got some very strong, groups in its fan base, and it's one that, you know, at one point, Dan Didio was thinking of killing off Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, what a mistake what a tragedy that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fundamentally unique character in all of comics as the first sidekick. And sometimes he's handled well, other times he's handled abysmally.
Well, that is certainly true. I think there's just a fundamental difference on how people see him.
Yes.
A non-Teen Titans fan, I think, has a fundamentally different view of Nightwing than a Teen Titans fan.
I think there's also a gender bias. I think that there's a contingent of female readers that have a view of him that's very different than male readers might have.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's nothing right or wrong about any of this, by the
way.
No,
there's nothing. But yes, Nightwing's a very interesting character who has been many different things, and particularly, like I'd say, the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd argue for the last 15 years until the new 52. What I loved about Dick Grayson, personally, was much more defined by Tim Drake than the Dick Grayson I got in that period.
Interesting. I've always loved the character since, you know, long before he became Nightwing.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved the story arc, the Judas Contract, where that happened.
Yep.
But it's also one where he's gone through some periods where he's just another street, you know, level hero.
Yeah, yeah. Those years in Bloodhaven, he was just kind of Daredevil.
Yeah, yes. And it's like, not bad, but not what makes him unique.
Yeah.
And part of what I'm curious as to how it pans out with Rebirth is, you know, Geoff Johns has worked with these creative teams to make sure that there's a common understanding as to what makes these characters tick, what makes them unique, what makes them really work. And in some cases, I am loving the output of that. In other cases, it's like, I see why you went where you went, but I agree with your premise, I disagree with your conclusion. And Nightwing is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, giving him a different mentor, not the way I would have gone. Not saying I'm right, though. But
no.
Obviously, I think I am. Otherwise, I wouldn't be thinking that.
How Mr. Johns' new job will affect his ability to keep doing that is also interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that. But I'm also worried that Geoff Johns had to do it. As chief creative officer for DC, he's the perfect choice. Given his inherent knowledge and love of the DC characters, he's the logical choice. He's a great choice. Brilliant writer.
I would argue he was one of three possible choices.
Who are the other two?
Berlanti and Guggenheim.
Fair enough.
They've proven they can put these characters on the screen and make them popular, unlike arguably what Johns and Snyder have done.
But were we talking the movies and TV stuff, I would agree entirely. Geoff Johns has such a long track record compared to them on the comic book side.
But isn't his new job more film and TV centric?
He has been promoted to have oversight over that, but he is still chief creative officer at DC Comics.
Okay. Again, I'm just worried, kind of like Jim Lee was technically a co-publisher that whole time and kind of spent all that time in video game design. I wonder how much time he's going to have for comics with the way television and the films are going.
Yeah, I agree with that concern. They have taken one or two things off his plate. Specifically, I think the DC Direct line or the collectible, you know, figure type stuff, which is fine. You know, I'm hoping
that's something Jim Lee should have been doing all along.
It's funny because I don't think they gave it to Jim Lee.
They did not give it to him.
But you're right; it should have been Jim Lee. My concern is if you had to have your chief creative officer hands on like that, what is going on with your editor in chief? Isn't that part of their job to understand what's cool about these characters and make that happen?
Well, and that comes back to the confusion of what's the difference between those two positions.
Yeah.
I mean, is the editor-in-chief that, or is he closer to a publisher? And the creative officer is really the person who's kind of the head editor.
My philosophical problem with Rebirth needing to happen comes down to DC having Geoff Johns as chief creative officer, Jim Lee as one of the co-publishers, Dan Didio as one of the co-publishers, and having an editor-in-chief, and all four of them having let the trains go off the rails, and then needing to kind of recorrect with Rebirth.
Yeah, nobody wants to blame Jeff because of all the work he's done.
I'm not blaming anyone.
Over the years. Oh, I agree with that. Okay, not blaming. Everyone wants, seemingly though, there was an idea that somehow Dan DiDio's to blame more than the other two.
I go down to editor-in-chief beneath the publishers. If the publishers have to be so hands-on to be hand-holding creative teams, what's your editorial department doing?
Well, yes, and we've talked about this plenty. DC editorial, the fact that many of us can't name most of them or recognize any of those names is probably not a good thing.
I need to find the time to go through a round or two of the DC comics and see if I can kind of figure out what an org chart might look like for editorial based on the credits. If somebody wants to help me with that, I would love that. I just think it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Going back to the list, rank 8, we got New Superman number 1, 117,684 units. This is one that I'm expecting a significant drop on.
You've read it, I take it.
I've read it, I take it, and even before that, the concept.
Yeah.
This reeked of Super Young Team and a few other things that just, while conceptually they could possibly maybe sort of somehow work, don't. It's early to tell. I don't want to prejudge the title. This is, though, a new character, a new property spinning out of the Superman mythos or whatever. Few titles sustain over the 100,000 mark. This seems highly unlikely to be one of them. Again, who knows? We'll see.
I tend to agree with you.
Not much of a gap between the Rebirth and the number one issues of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
No.
Rebirth did 113,964 units. The number one issue did 108,707 units. Then we get to one of the interesting approaches to the twice monthly with Wonder Woman, with the even issues and the odd issues. The odd issues being current day, even issues being the flashback to year one, essentially. And number two dropped 13.25% to 103,758 units. Number three dropped almost 9% to 94,465 units. This is the kind of title where I could see a bouncing back and forth, even odd issue having different trends. It won't happen, and clearly isn't happening, but they're essentially two different Wonder Woman titles. I mean, I'm not really seeing any connection between the two stories at the moment.
I agree with, yeah. Again, everybody wants to give Rucka the benefit of the doubt, as do I, but yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with this book yet.
And I'm not sure why they insisted it be one book versus two. So we'll see how that one goes.
Arguably, so you can put Rucka's name on both of them.
He could write both of them.
And do the double shipping. We've talked about this. There's always going to be a favorite book. There's always going to be a flagship book. This way you don't have one of those, and you've got his name on both of them.
Suppose neither of them were titled just Wonder Woman.
Of course, one of them wouldn't be. One of them would have to be titled something else.
But I'm saying neither of them was titled that.
Okay, one of them would still inevitably be the flagship.
But it would be fascinating to find out which.
It would be. You're
because
right.
Because both would be written by Rucka. Both would have really good artists. It's just one set in the future, one set in the past. I mean, or in the present versus the past. You know, it's, I don't know.
Here's the thing. I don't think that can last. I think that's a first issue, maybe first arc, first two arc kind of thing. I don't think the long-term plan can be one in the future, one in the past forever.
I agree. I think the even numbers after the first arc, either it moves a little forward in time, or I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm curious.
Yes. At least they didn't go with the strategy you suggested, and then when the first arc ends, hey, now we get Wonder Woman number one. Which, you know, other publishers probably would have done in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm surprised they didn't just do two Wonder Womans and both have number ones. Just to really confuse everything. See, we've got Flash. It dropped about 11.25% on the second issue, and then another 5-6% on the third issue. Superman.
You skipped one.
Yeah, I skipped Titans. Its first issue, 102,432 units, compared to how the Rebirth did 72,085 units last month.
Yep.
This is one where I think there's definitely some pent-up demand for this group of characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly once we saw exactly who they were going to be.
And I'm excited about this team, but that's because of pent-up demand more than maybe what's hitting the page. I want this title to be successful.
Yes.
Superman number two, down 16%. Number three, down another 4.25%. That puts number two at 101,953 units, and number three down at 97,606 units.
Now come the next two, I think, are very interesting, and I want to include another book in this discussion, or actually two more books in this discussion.
Okay, Detective Comics. This is the last one over the 100,000 mark at 100,626 units on 936. 937 dropped another 8.4% down to 92,171 units. This is one where I'm wondering if we may see a little bit of a growth soon on this, because it's a team Batman book, and kind of without Batman in one or two places. He's there, but not in the lead. Batwoman.
It's the Bat family book, no doubt about it.
But it's good. It's really good.
It's really good. I agree. I love it. But yeah, it's not a traditional Batman detective book. And what I wanted to bring up here is going down quite a bit further to ranks 27 and 33 are Action Comics, the other book that didn't do the renumbering.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Action, 959, did 83,336. And 960 did 75,709. You know,
what's interesting is on 959, it was a negligible drop of like 0.2%.
Yep.
But then on 960, it dropped over 9%.
Batman, though, the same thing. I'm sorry, Detective, same thing. The drop on 936 was much smaller than the drop on 937. It wasn't quite as wide, but it was 2.8% compared on the first drop, and then an additional 8.4% on the second one.
And what's weird is all of these were May solicitations.
Yep.
So it's almost running counter to the, you know, the pattern we're seeing on some of these other titles.
Yeah, exactly. And then the book right underneath the first Detective, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, number one at 99,151, the first book under 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it ranked 24, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Rebirth, number one at 88,837. Arguably other tangential Bat teams. Are you as surprised at how well these two did as I am? I enjoy both these books a lot. Birds of Prey doesn't surprise me quite as much as Red Hood and the Outlaws did. I enjoyed the last Red Hood and the Outlaws, but you know that book couldn't draw flies. Nobody was buying that book.
I would say that the genius of what DC did with Rebirth was by getting it down to a very much more manageable number of titles. It made sense for people to sample everything again, like they did with the new 52.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, because there are fewer titles that are coming out more frequently, I think they've got a higher likelihood of reader retention. So I think this is reflective of the hopes people have around these titles. And Rebirth, or not Rebirth, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey went for, 120 issues?
Well, yeah, that run, absolutely.
So it's got a following. It got a TV show at one point, even. It did.
It's a great show.
Excellent show.
I bought the DVDs. I'm one of the five people that owns them.
I loved it. It's so one of the things my sister and I have on the list to do an episode on at some point.
Absolutely should.
If we do, we may try to loop you in on that, maybe. We'll see. But Red Hood and the Outlaws, that seems to be a mirror image of the upcoming Trinity title, where you've got Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you've got what they're phrasing as the broken versions of each. Red Hood, the Robin gone wrong. Artemis, the Wonder Woman gone, you know, not so right or whatever. And then Bizarro is the Superman analog.
Yep.
I don't think Red Hood in and of itself, you know, 88,837. Yeah, he's not bringing that.
Bizarro is not either, though, because Action, you know, Action couldn't do anything better.
And neither is Artemis.
Well, yeah, that's true. But at least Wonder Woman's ahead of this. Even though Artemis, yes, is an odd character.
Yeah, it's just both of these are ones I expect to see a drop on next time. I don't think they're going to plummet, but it's not out of the question either.
Which still leads to the what happened to the old Outlaws question, but that's a whole different issue.
We haven't seen them since the New 52. They may never have existed.
Not those old Outlaws, the New 52 Outlaws. Roy Harper is surprisingly in a weird spot now.
Those weren't Outlaws, that was Red Hood and Arsenal.
Oh, sorry. Fair enough. I thought that was the second version of that book, though, was it? Wasn't Red Hood and the Outlaws when it first came out? And then somewhere in one of the titles?
Because it was Arsenal and Starfire. Then Starfire got her own book, and they renamed it to Red Hood and Arsenal. You are correct.
Yeah.
It's getting to where they just keep redoing these damn things over and over again. Like I said, I can't keep it straight anymore.
Well, Roy Harper is going to be this version of the DC Universe's Wally West of the New 52.
How so?
I have a feeling he's going to get forgotten.
I don't. Isn't he over in Titans?
He is, sort of. He's there. Yes, he is there. No doubt about it, he's there. Something tells me something will go wrong there. I have a feeling we're going to lose Roy.
Interesting. Okay. I hope that doesn't happen, although, frankly, he's, of the various Titans, the most expendable, probably, or one of the most.
Exactly.
He's wearing a red shirt, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's a bad sign. Doesn't he watch any sci-fi? Jeez. The only time red shirts are good is the novel and the upcoming TV show based on the novel.
Yeah.
These are ones that, again, are monthly books. We'll see how they do.
Yeah. And this is where it gets really weird, too, as long as we mention Roy. What they're going to do with Corey in that book, she seems way out of place in that book.
In?
Teen Titans.
Oh, Teen Titans. They're trying to do an odd mishmash of some of the new Teen Titans. She's not of that generation. Yeah, but that book, I think, is going to struggle because you've got her as kind of a callback to the classic New Teen Titans, even though it's a very different take on the character. You've got Raven, which is a different take on the character, again, from that group.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Changeling / Beast Boy, or whatever he's going through, who's undergone a color change.
Yes.
In the New 52.
And seems to have been de-aged significantly.
I'm trying to remember, compared to when he first showed up in Ravagers?
Well, no. Compared to the old one at the end of the last Titans in the late 90s.
Fair enough. They're going back to more original, not even original New Teen Titans Beast Boy. They're almost going to Doom Patrol Beast Boy.
Yeah. And then you've got the weird, and then you've got the young kids, which...
Well, you've got Kid Flash, who's never been a member of any team, because he's, I don't think, shown up in costume yet.
Yep.
And then you've got Damian, so it's... None of those characters...
Go together?
Well, none of them were in the current Teen Titans series that just ended.
Well, that's okay.
Raven was. I'm sorry, Raven was.
I wish the old ones were with the old Titans.
I don't think this version of Raven and Changeling or Beast Boy fit with the older Titans. I am curious how they would explain Starfire.
This goes back to the discussion about my love of Dick Grayson. I know most people think the Barbara Dick relationship's important or the Donna Dick relationship's important. I think the Dick Corey relationship's the most interesting one in his life.
I would say the Barbara one and the Corey one, those two, particularly in comparison to each other,
yes,
are fascinating.
Yes, they are.
Because those two on a certain surface level, you know, redheads, etc., there's similarities there, but they couldn't be more different.
Oh, no, they're not even close.
You know, and I think with the New 52, that got compounded or taken to an extreme. Or a Batgirl has photographic memory. Starfire can't remember anything for more than a few seconds, it seems like, at times.
Yes.
So, it's... I'm also waiting for the other titles to kind of eventually get released.
Yes.
Because we've been promised a number of characters that we really have yet to see any sign of. In terms of the Super Sons, they've kind of delayed that launch a bit. You go back to the DC Universe Rebirth 2-page splash, there were all of the Shazam characters and whatnot. You know, and I'm not saying, hey, you got to have it all released right now or something. I'm good with a slow release. I think that'll give people time to sample the titles, figure out what they like, and stick with that. But I'm also wanting things to not just seem like they're just the next issue of the New 52 title.
Yeah, absolutely.
And along those lines, one of the titles that's a bit further down that's interesting at rank 31 is Hellblazer Rebirth.
Yes.
This is a character and a title that... when they folded the Vertigo line into the main DC universe, which it had spun out of, this character went from a 300-issue series to a new number one, to another new number one a little later, to another new number one, to now this new number one.
Well, and to be fair, yeah, when it first folded in, he didn't get his own book.
Right, it was Justice League Dark that he was in, you're correct. Yep. And it's like they're backpedaling. It's not like they're backpedaling, they are backpedaling. And if it works, great. 76,730 units for what's essentially kind of maybe a Vertigo-ish title. Classic Vertigo, not current Vertigo. That's high.
It is. There's something about this character that, for some reason, DC Universe has never figured out. He's had several movies based off him. Arguably, they aren't great films, but he's gotten there. He had a TV show. Wasn't that successful?
Several films or just one?
There are two, aren't there?
There was the Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and then I thought there was the other one. I thought there was two.
There may be. I've got the Keanu Reeves. I've never watched it. I've stockpiled the TV series and never watched it. I did see his appearance on Arrow, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know, like you said, 300 issues at Vertigo, but seemingly they've never figured that, you know. DC Comics has never figured out what people like about those other characters.
I think he's a character like Punisher over at Marvel. That Punisher arguably, in some people's mind, worked best in the Max line and doesn't fit in the Marvel Universe. And Constantine is a little hard to get to fit around the regular DC characters, just because he's such an anti-hero at times. Yeah. And it can be made to work, but they are struggling with that. You know, we're early in the honeymoon period with the Rebirth titles. It's going to be another month or two before even the earliest ones start to kind of get out of that period. And really once the returnability goes away, we may see an uptick of 20%. We may not. That's where I think it's going to be, fun to see where these books kind of start to land.
Yeah, I completely agree.
One or two other, DC titles I want to talk about further on the list. Jump down to rank 77. We got the second issue of Future Quest. It did 30,709 units. That's a drop of nearly 46%. And then down at rank 84, it dropped another 9.5% to 27,785 units. This is a title I am still very much enjoying. It's a lot of fun. Elsewhere on the list, we've got, let me filter down to just DC for a second. We've got Wacky Racers at, or Wacky Race Land, my mistake.
Yes.
Wacky Racers was actually fun. this one dropped over 47% to 18,001 units, which is right above that at the same sales level is Batman Beyond, number 14, they are about to do a new Batman Beyond series. They're putting, who are they putting on it? I think it's Dan Jurgens maybe on the writing and Cliff Chang maybe on the art.
Okay.
It may not be. I may be wrong. I'm
okay.
Doing that from memory. But it was a creative team that struck me as they're throwing not a top of the stack creators at it, but pretty strong creators enough that it's like, hey, they're taking this seriously and doing some stuff with it.
Yeah.
Back to the Hanna-Barbera stuff. Flintstones number one came in at 43,995 units, and Scooby Apocalypse number three really only dropped like a percent to 29,493 units. What entertains me and I find humorous about the Hanna-Barbera line here is how they're doing radically new and different takes on these characters while trying to go back to the comfortable and the familiar for the DC titles. It's like, if it didn't work for DC titles, what makes you think it's going to work for these others? Wacky Raceland is, as of the solicitation for the fourth issue, going to be a six-issue miniseries. So that was not the way it was originally pitched.
Which is interesting, because I don't think the sales, per se, necessitate that, at least not on what we can see.
At 18,000, it's not in the, oh my god, we've got to cancel it now, but it's certainly in the danger zone.
Yeah, still 127.
Yeah, I don't know if they've got any licensing fees to Hanna-Barbera, even though it's a sister company branch of the Time Warner family or whatever. I don't know, I hope not. Yeah. But I don't see any reason to think this is not going to drop again on the That's upcoming true. Issues.
And at this point, anything under 20,000, you'd think would have to go anyways, so, yeah.
You look a little further to Dr. Fate, you've got some stuff well under 10. Bloodlines is 6,282 units down at rank 255. We may not even see the final issue of Bloodlines on the list.
Okay, fair enough, but that's different.
Both, I think, if I had seen them and said, should we greenlight this or not, I would say, no, are you kidding? So in that respect, I think they're similar, personally.
Okay. Fair enough.
But if we greenlit only things I thought were going to work, be a much shorter list. And a lot of people would be very unhappy, because there are certain publishers I would not have greenlit a single thing on. But that's just my personal taste, and clearly those publishers are doing just fine publishing what they're publishing. So
here's what I can say, though. If you kind of assume the Hanna-Barbera stuff and the Rebirth stuff is in the same universe, I guess.
Which I don't.
Not in the same reboot. Wacky Raceland is the lowest DC book kind of from that rebirth.
I guess I see it as a different product line entirely.
Well, it's still the lowest.
Yeah.
The next lowest, if you take out the reorders, you take out the ones still on old numbering or digital first or all that stuff, the next lowest is Future Quest at 27,785, which is really out of it. You know, it's really far behind that.
Yes, yes.
That make any sense.
Well, and a lot of the things we're seeing further down on the list here from DC are either Vertigo titles, something like Scooby-Doo Team-Up, which apparently is doing well enough to go monthly, even though it's only selling 7,892 units, but I like it, so I'm good with it going monthly. But a lot of this other stuff, Legend of Wonder Woman, Batman 66, Meet Steed, Mrs. Peel, Injustice Gods Among Us, and Adventures of Supergirl, and DC Comics Bombshells, digital first stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's digital first stuff, it's old numbering stuff, it's Vertigo, it is what it is. You know, it's kind of not either from the Hanna-Barbera reboot or the DC rebirth.
Most of it's stuff that's playing out and just finishing off, yes. No, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, in that way, yeah, Wacky Raceland kind of does make sense that it's going away sooner than later.
Yeah, it was one that, if it wasn't for a couple of the captions telling me clearly these are supposed to be versions of characters that I knew from the cartoon, it would be unrecognizable to me. And I think what we're seeing on these Hanna-Barbera ones is the further the characters seem to get from the comfortable and the familiar, the less well they seem to be selling. But it's a little too early to make that connection based on how Scooby Apocalypse and Future Quest are doing.
Yeah.
But you look at Flintstones, which is very, artistically it's a little different style, but thematically and content-wise not radically different than the old cartoon. Wacky Raceland, almost unrecognizable.
Yeah, I actually think it's funny. I think when you were speaking with John Sundress, he made a comment about the Flintstones that I actually agree with. If you've seen the films, the live-action films, it's very evocative of those. I think it's got some recognizability problems. Last time you saw them was the original cartoons.
I have not seen the live-action Flintstones.
Okay.
So I don't have that touch point.
Yeah.
To make that comparison. When he said that, it's like, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. It made perfect sense. Because it does, and I think the visuals are part of it.
Yeah, no, it's clearly the visuals.
Yeah.
More so than probably anything, it's the visuals.
Let's
go all the way back up. I want to go back to spot 25, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Amazing Spider-Man number 15, ranked 25, 78,993, up 34%. Any idea what is going on there?
That was one that when I was doing my article, it's like, you know, I got to say something about this, because if I don't, Steven, my editor at CBR, is going to ask, and rightfully so. And I was looking, geez, do they have variant covers? Do they have this? I think...
Because then I do want to go farther down the list and ask you about that one, too.
I think that one sold, the Amazing Spider-Man number 15. This is the issue that Drew and I reviewed on the Weekly Comic Spotlight. Yep. And the reason I wanted to review it is the cover teased Mary Jane as the new Iron Spider.
Yes.
I think that's why this did so well. The cover tease. It's a great-looking cover. It's like, ooh, she's going to be a hero now. What's going to happen with that? It was an intriguing story element.
Okay.
And then they told the story they told. Which I enjoyed, I thought was good, but if people were thinking we're now going to have an amazing Iron Spider title or some such, I think they're going to be quite disappointed.
Yes.
It was a little bit maybe bait and switch. That's the best I can come up with. It's possible it was in a subscription box or some other shenanigan went on, but it's only up by about 22,000-ish, so I got nothing better than that cover.
Yeah. And then the other one wasn't 16 that came out this month. It was 1.6, which kind of is where you'd expect it to be after 1.5. That's down at like rank 65.
This is another one where it's the embedded miniseries shenanigan.
Yeah.
annoying. The one that surprised me the most was Han Solo over at Marvel.
I agree. I was surprised by the sales of the first one, and I am surprised by the sales of the second one.
First one, 152,595 units. Second one dropped 45% to 82,738 units, which is more reasonable. And it, again, goes to show just the first issue shenanigans Marvel's doing. And I say shenanigans, it's variant covers, it's priming the pump, and on the one hand, it makes sense to do that to saturate the market, get as many potential readers and stuff out there, but it's also a matter of so much of the sales in the industry. Easily, I'm going to say a minimum of 10% are based on cover gimmicks. And right now, with record sales, could we lose 10%? Yeah. Do we want to lose 10%? No. When I see drops like that on second issues, particularly at Marvel, and I think part of why we're not seeing those at DC is they're being, generally speaking, a lot more conservative on variants, particularly on those first issues. They're not doing, you know, half a dozen or a dozen of them.
Yeah, we'll see. As you mentioned, actually, last month, we're in a bit of a lull for Star Wars between films. And Marvel has put out so many of these books. They're still doing fine, but Star Wars isn't quite the juggernaut it was a year ago.
Correct. And will it be that juggernaut when the next film comes out? Is it going to truly cycle or not?
Yeah,
and
we'll see.
If it comes in waves like that and you know the pattern of the waves, you're good. But if you misjudge the pattern of the waves, you'll wipe out. What I'm finding surprising, filtering the list to Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
First off, if you go to rank 124, Empress number 4, 18,319 units, that's like it lost over half the sales from the previous issue. And it came out on the beginning of the month, so it's not like it's...
What rank?
124.
124, thank you.
Sorry. So I don't know why it suddenly plummeted in sales.
Okay.
But it's a convenient kind of a cutoff point, or we could use Spidey a few issues above it. 20,000 or below.
Okay.
They've got a surprising number of titles here. And Marvel usually is a bit more draconian on this kind of a stuff. We've got All New Inhumans. We've got Nova, Scarlet Witch, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Howard the Duck, Venom Space Knight, Contest of Champions, that was the final issue. Mockingbird, Web Warriors has another issue coming out, and it's axed. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Guardians of Infinity, Nighthawk, Patsy Walker, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Drax, Hyperion, and most of the rest is either True Believers or otherwise reorder activity.
Yep.
But that's a pretty long list, and you can include Rocket Raccoon and Groot also into the under 20,000. And if you're willing to say potentially a dozen issues as a rounding, then you got Spidey in there as well. It's a big list of things that are in an area that Marvel is most likely gonna end these things soon.
And again, if you want to do 20,000, but could easily be under 20,000 by next month, you got the Loki, the Vision, the Astonishing Iron Man, and Silver Surfer as well.
Absolutely. There are a number of titles that are within an issue of losing enough to get to that danger point. Because in my mind, it's not like you've got a hard line right at 20,000. You got a little bit of a gradient above that. It's just, you know, once you're below that, you're clearly in the danger zone.
Yeah.
We've got all three issues of Captain America, Steve Rogers on the list.
Yes, I was going to say, let's go back to those, okay?
Issue number three, the most recent, 65,455 units, down 12.59% from the total known sales of issue number two. Issue number two had reorder activity down at rank 216 of another 8,468 units. But most impressively, at rank 88, the first issue had even more reorder activity of another 27,444 units. That one is just, I mean, it's telling a controversial story, but it's telling it in a way that's getting a lot of people talking about it. And hey, I don't know if I like it or not. I better go check it out.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to, even with the reorders on number two, you're still down not quite 50% from number one.
Certainly total, by the third issue, you're well over half. Yeah.
But yeah, total known sales of 74,000 for the second issue, with total known sales of 140,220 for the first issue, is, you know, down, you know, quickly. What is that? 46.59%.
Absolutely, but the reorder activity, even though it's down, is indicating that there is definite interest.
Mm.
And yeah, that it may be that because that third issue came out in the last week of the month, we may see some solid reorder activity on it next time. Because the way comic sales work is, you, as a retailer, you pre-order what you think you need. And once the final order cutoff happens, which is generally about 3 weeks prior, about the time it goes to print, after that, you can do advanced reorders. Those are things you just may not get when it first comes out, but you've advanced reordered them, so you got the reorders on the book, so if you can get them, you get them. Since this came out on the 27th, there just wasn't time for that sort of a thing. Technically, no reorders could come.
I agree, but they would have had the sales from number one, and probably from number two for the final order cutoff.
It really just comes down to how fast the retailers react, I think, on some of this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to suddenly spike in sales or anything of the sort. It's just reflective of, they did some story shenanigans by telling a very controversial story. They got some people up in arms, and understandably so, and it got people interested in the story.
Yep.
And if that technique works, gosh, they might do it again. You know, and why not if it works?
There is a fascinating, yeah, essentially autobiography of someone that worked in the wrestling business called Controversy Creates Cash.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it's his life story, and part of it is kind of his business philosophy. And it's summed up in that title.
Yeah.
If
they're talking about you, they're talking about you.
Exactly.
Which right now, in our political climate, is a bit of a scary notion, I think. Of course, I think politicians are just scary in general.
Well, but talking about you, arguably, that list we just ran through of books under 20,000,
mm-hmm,
some of the other books that are getting all the critical buzz are down there. So you've got to be actually talked about by people that care and not just this weird subset of people that have an agenda.
Well, it comes down to whether they've got an agenda or not. There's a very big difference between reader buzz, yes, and critical acclaim.
Yes.
And as somebody who's been podcasting about comics for, you know, many, many, many years now, I've always considered what I do personally as just, you know, it's me talking about comics, i.e. reader buzz.
Mm-hmm.
not any sort of critical acclaim or anything, because I certainly don't think enough people listen to me in that respect. When I see certain books that are just, you know, oh, wow, this is brilliant or whatever, and it's selling not so great, it may have some artistic, serious merit or whatnot, but this is a business.
And there's very few of those that have ever turned that around. They exist. I mean, Walking Dead's one of them.
Yeah, it was going to be the example I went to.
Well, arguably, though, to a lesser degree, and it showed up much more in the trades than it ever did on the single issues, Fables kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
But some of those books we just talked about that are selling low at Marvel, that have some of that critical buzz, I don't think they're ever going to turn around anywheres.
Speaking of that, let's jump over to Image for a moment.
Sure. Remind me to come back to Marvel. I want to get back to rank 78 before we're done.
Sure, I'll do a quick thing over at Image, and then we'll go back, and then we'll maybe go back again. Unsurprisingly, the top-selling Image book is Walking Dead, at issue number 156, at 76,354 units. We had a conversation last time around.
Oh, yes.
About how come he can't strike gold twice with Invincible.
Yes.
What has since recently been announced, as we record this on the 18th, I found out about it, I think, yesterday.
Yesterday. He wrote the letter yesterday morning.
Invincible will end with issue 144.
Yep.
Basically, you know, he's told the story he's wanted to tell. He's realized he's winding it down. It's not the kind of book that makes sense to hand off to other creators, because it's kind of his vision. His artist, Corey Walker, yes. I think, is, after about a decade of doing the monthly grind, ready to move on to other stuff.
Yeah, all of which sounds good for I can't figure out a way to sell this thing.
You know, it's not selling badly, but if they're ready to move on, having told some really great stories over the years, I'm ready for Kirkman to take a title off his slate, to have another chance to capture lightning in the bottle again.
Yep.
Or at least try to. And I'm not knocking him when I say he hasn't done it a second time, because how many people do it the first time?
Yeah, and the answer is nobody, and even some of the other, even the other huge name creators have not been able to do this. And, I mean, Lord knows, most of them have tried over at Image.
Yeah. It's just, the sales trend we've seen over on Walking Dead, of the steady upward trend, not to say it goes up every issue, but it's always generally trending upwards, I'd be hard-pressed to name any other book that has it over anywhere remotely a similar kind of a time frame, like even a year-long stretch.
Which is interesting. If you look at rank 133, I want to look at rank 132 and 133.
Sure.
This always cracks me up. Again, Mark Millar, Jupiter's Legacy, volume 2, number 2, down 40%. We talked about this book a month ago. The original numbers weren't nearly as good, and you said, well, at least they're kind of in line with where it would have been if it had continued. That clearly didn't happen this month, down to 17,030 issues.
Oh, 40% drop will do that, yeah.
Yep. What's interesting is the title right above it is The Longest Lived, and literally right above it at 17,156, Spawn 164, up 6.5% this month, but again, still just plugging away. Yeah, it's interesting how those things happen, and I do think there is something to just longevity and a long-term fan base, and it's still comics. We can talk all we want about it's superheroes, or yeah, we got to do other things. Nothing leads itself. There's no other type of story other than a procedural, perhaps, that can inevitably lead you to being able to do that number of issues.
Yeah.
There just isn't.
Really, the only other thing that has the longevity that some of these ongoing comics have are soap operas.
Well, I was going to say soap operas and other weird niche things. I don't know if it made the list this month, but, you know, we sometimes talk about things like Knights of the Dinner Table. But again, very, very niche-y to a very specific audience.
Niche and otherwise unique, because that's half magazine, half comic.
Yeah. And again, to a very, very subset audience.
Yeah.
And again, not bad. Knights of Dinner Table's, I think, a wonderful publication.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never going to top this list, ever.
No. It's hitting the cross-section of comic readers and gamers, both of which are time-consuming hobbies, so to be in deep enough on both, a little hard.
And tabletop gamers, even.
Yeah, yeah.
Now when you say gamers, everybody assumes you mean video gamers.
No. I was thinking role-playing games.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking tabletop RPGers.
Amish tabletop gaming is what we're talking. what I find kind of funny about the spawn numbers there at the 17,156 units is I can remember writing the article of Will Walking Dead outsell Spawn.
Yep.
And, you know, it's doing so crazily now. It's
I don't know if we mentioned it at 76,354, rank 32, if we haven't.
Yeah. I mentioned the sales, not the rank, though.
There you go.
Yeah. Shall we go back to Marvel? You have one or two you want to talk about there?
Well, we're talking about Steve Rogers and how well it's doing. I wanted to look at Sam Wilson.
Okay.
And this, we've had this discussion about the flagship titles and yada, yada, yada. It's just under 30,000. Took actually a pretty steep drop for an issue 11, down 8.89% to 29,145 this month. Again, I'm not sure how much. I think Green Lanterns is going to have this same problem. I think it's hard to sustain classic characters when you fundamentally change who they are and the people in the suits and their backstory and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's extra hard when the real version's also on the stand with them.
Yes. When you are the understudy and the lead actor sort of a thing is there on stage with you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just tough.
And like I said, I think Green Lanterns could, even though, you know, these are still the ones and twos that we're talking about on this list, I think Green Lanterns could have that same problem.
Well, how is Amazing Spider-Man, which is doing top, where is the Miles Morales Spider-Man?
What's that book called?
I think just Spider-Man, because that's not confusing. Yeah, it's there at rank 46.
Yeah, I see it. 52,000 compared to 87,900 for Amazing.
So you got
doing better. Yeah, that's better than you'd expect. Actually, that's
it was the flagship title of the Ultimate Verse for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and outselling the Embedded Mini at 1.6 of Amazing.
Well, and outselling the Civil War Amazing Spider-Man title.
Yes.
By a few hundred units, if that.
And Spider Gwen, and you know. Other random Spider Woman and other random spider titles.
But it's another case of the real guy and the understudy, if you will.
Yep.
Miles
Morales, at least the way he was introduced and where he came from in the Ultimate Book, he had a chance to make an identity as something else. More so than I think Sam Wilson did, more so than I think Boz and Jessica are getting over in Green Lanterns.
Let me toss a counterexample at you.
Okay.
Okay, we're talking about the person who has the title and the person who comes in kind of as the understudy, maybe winds up with a slightly different name just to avoid some confusion, whatever.
Okay.
At rank 96, we've got Captain Marvel. This is the Carol Danvers version.
Yep.
This is also in the midst of a Civil War II tie-in, so that helps. But then up above, at rank 82, is Ms. Marvel, who originally, Ms. Marvel was Carol Danvers' previous identity before she had to go back to Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue the Kamala Khan is the understudy, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and outselling.
It is. We'll see how that lasts. That Ms. Marvel's another one of those that feels much more like critics willing it than sales being there.
Yet I'm seeing the sales here, but I see your point. I'm not disagreeing. It's this one seems to be an odd mix of critical darling and actually striking a chord with a particular audience that was feeling potentially underrepresented in some cases, because they were underrepresented.
But again, let's take the first issue out. It's weird.
Is this potentially a case where this character has become more popular than
Carol?
Than Carol.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little. We were trying to think of new characters that were created a month ago.
Yeah, this is one that I think is a new character saddled with an old name.
With an old name, yeah. And as I pointed out, you know, the old school guy in me, I still think Carol stole the name from Jean, so.
No, because that was always Marvel Girl, not Captain Marvel or Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, Ms. Marvel, Marvel Girl, whatever.
Now she stole the name from Monica Rambeau or whatever, the yes. Photon or whatever, yes. You know, who stole it from there have been so many Captain Marvels over at Marvel, I can't keep them straight either. There was the Kree one, a couple of Kree ones.
Here's the great thing. Marvel Comics has had a million Captain Marvels, Ms. Marvels, Marvel, whatever, Marvel family stuff. And if you walk down the street and ask the average person, who's Captain Marvel? If their answer is not, I don't know, 9 times out of 10, it's Billy Batson.
I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, they're going to say Shazam. I don't know his name or who he is, but he says Shazam.
My point is, I think it's funny that Marvel has tried so hard to get a Captain, Mr., Mrs., whatever, Marvel in their universe. None of them, I think, have had the pop culture, have sunk in like Shazam.
I was reading something, it must have been on Comic Book Resources, around how early on there was some sort of similar kind of naming thing, and Stan Lee, being a nice guy, says, yeah, okay, we just won't do that. But then DC kind of turned around and did something. He's like, well, if they're going to do that, what the heck? Let's have a Wonder Man, you know? And just kind of, it seemed like there had been potentially a gentleman's agreement that wasn't honored.
Yeah.
And that's when we started getting into this wackiness.
And I would argue, after, like I said, the 80% of people that go, I have no idea what you're talking about, we'll just eliminate them completely.
They're abstaining from the vote, absolutely.
The largest group's still going to be Shazam. I'd argue the next biggest group is still going to be like me and say Jean Grey.
I think you could do a Who is Captain Marvel survey images and literally have like 20 different images.
Oh, yeah.
And the miss rate would be higher than the hit rate.
Of course.
Even with the Shazam version, if you toss up the Captain Marvel Jr.,
yeah,
Black Adam, and a few other kind of decoys, that's part of where this just gets silly is how confusingly similar some of these characters are, some of these titles are, and I'm hoping with DC having funneled down to fewer titles, they're inherently more unique titles.
Yes.
So, what else was particularly interesting over at Marvel?
Something over at Marvel. There's a bunch of other things that you had highlighted that I think we should talk about.
Okay. Such as?
Well, the Archie books.
You know, the Archie stuff, that reboot, I was very, you know, initially, you know, is this going to work or not? It has worked so well. It is amazing. Betty and Veronica, number one. Was the second best non-Marvel DC book with 70,829 units. A lot of that on the strength of a bazillion different variants. And it was by Adam Hughes, writing, art, cover, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a joy to behold in terms of the art. The story was fun, too.
Yeah.
So this, to me, was another knock-it-out-of-the-park kind of a thing from Archie.
And I would argue even all the way down to rank 152. Archie number 10, still selling 15,199, and again, through the direct market, compared to where they were 4 or 5 years ago, that's still an amazing mark for that book.
Absolutely, and I expect Betty and Veronica to gravitate more towards that level, but you're right, this is numbers that historically we never saw for Archie by and large.
Yeah.
So they're having a great deal of success with this relaunch, and I'm happy for them, and I'm still reading them, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
And
then you've got the Boom books.
Yeah, over at Boom, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, number 5, 28,504 units. Number 2 of Power Rangers Pink, that miniseries, 18,342.
Another crushing drop, though.
The crushing
down
drop.
Down 53%.
Yeah, I expect that for Power Rangers Pink, because I think they did a couple of variants and whatnot, and it's focusing on one particular Power Ranger, fan favorite though she may be. The fact of the matter is, as well as Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is doing for Boom, it is effectively a brand new property to comic books.
Yes.
And you need to kind of build up a little bit of momentum or whatever. Now, Power Morphicon was last weekend as we record this. That is the every other year Power Rangers convention in Pasadena.
Yep.
Boom was there. The writer for this comic was there. Hopefully they introduced it to what is an incredibly diehard audience for the property. And who knows, we may see some a bump as a result of that, but
I
doubt it.
Not knowing anything about that show, but having to happen to have been in the area, that is an interesting mix of people.
How so? And I'm not disagreeing with you whatsoever.
I don't know what I would have expected the audience for a Power Rangers convention to look like, but I can tell you what I saw was not in my top 20 if I had had to make something up.
If I had to describe it, I would say crazy diverse.
Ridiculously so. Age, gender.
Age, ethnicity, gender.
Everything. Crazy spread across wide, wide groups. I was surprised.
I had considered going to that convention, but it was too soon after Comic-Con. I couldn't make it back out to the West Coast this soon. But I did try to, they were streaming parts of it. Or at least trying to. They had some major technical glitches. But one of the vendors was streaming, so I was able to watch him interview some of his customers and whatnot. That was fun. It's funny. I mean, here's a guy out of Japan showing up for a convention in the LA, you know, Pasadena area, and he's, you know, set up completely for the streaming and stuff, whereas the people running the show that are more local were having some issues. But he also streams as part of his business, so he's just got the experience. I have watched quite a bit on YouTube, because the fun thing about a lot of these conventions, even if you can't go to them, like I couldn't go to this one, you can virtually attend it to varying degrees of success. I was able to watch the panel where they introduced the new cast for Ninja Steel.
Yeah.
From 7 different perspectives, because there were at least 30,000 cameras or whatever in the room. And it was fun because certain people would cut certain things or whatever out, and getting that fuller, here's what really happened, was fun.
I will say this, and it makes perfect sense. I did not, one of the things I would not have predicted was the influence of the Super Sentai show and the Japanese culture and the anime fans. That was part of what I wouldn't have predicted, but by no means was that all of the fan base.
No, it is a mix of people who love the Super Sentai, people who despise the Super Sentai, people who are completely unaware of it, people who are brand new to Power Rangers with young kids, people who've been, enhanced or entranced by the property for a lifetime. And it's at the point where the actors on the show are at the age where they literally grew up watching the entire series and remember having watched the whole thing. Matter of fact, I was just watching on YouTube before we recorded, a channel I've started watching after doing this YouTube search for Power Morphicon and watching the panel. It was a Q&A with the guy who's going to be the new Blue Ranger.
Okay.
And he was saying how, you know, he and his brother had grown up, I'm not sure where they originally were. I'm thinking Japan, but I could be wrong. Having watched Zoo Ranger, which is what Mighty Morphin was based on, then moving to the States when Mighty Morphin comes out, and they're like, it's the same, but it's not. It's different. And being fans of both franchises growing up. And that wound up being one of the key moments at that panel was, I had talked about how at San Diego Comic-Con, Yoshi, the current Blue Ranger for Dino Charge, moderated the Boom panel and did a really good job. He's hardcore fan on this stuff. And the brother of the new Blue Ranger for Ninja Steel. And he actually got to announce his brother got the part, having not known that. So they're at the panel, and he's like, handed an envelope he's got to open up and read, thinking, great, my brother auditioned for this, got turned down, I got to read some other guy's name, and sees his brother's name there. And again, watching the footage of this, it was fun.
Well, and I also think it's still surprising for the ones that are still with us, the popularity of the originals. I think you said you had the chance to see Austin St. John at a convention recently.
Yeah, a matter of fact, he and many of the others were at Power Morphicon, And he's one that literally stepped out of the limelight entirely.
Yes.
Like, the other Rangers, it's like, whatever happened to the guy? He, you know, went overseas, was a medic and stuff, seems to have had quite a bit of real adventure. And,
but he's also the one that came back, isn't he? Didn't he do Zio?
He did Zio, but that was like 2 or 3 years after he was out for from Mighty Morphin.
Gotcha, okay.
So that was within the first couple. That was still when they had the rest of some of the original Rangers involved.
Okay.
After that, it was with Lightspeed about 7 years in that they started rotating casts and storylines every season. And it was funny because they had a panel again. This is a little off topic, but it's interesting because they had their Forever Red panel. All the Red Rangers that were there at the convention were on panel. And the moderator, who's a great, great moderator, asked one of them from Lightspeed Rescue. It's like, yours was the show. No, it was Lost Galaxy. Anyways, yours was the show. It was the first time they'd completely rotated the cast out and was doing a new storyline. What did you think of that? And he's like, well, this is the first I'm hearing of it. I thought it was, you know, great or whatever. It was the story they were giving me. You know, but this is a franchise that has been going on since 1992 nonstop. That predates everything on this list of comics we've got. Even the long-running... maybe not.
Not quite.
What time of year did Spawn come out?
That wasn't even the one I was thinking of, so...
What were you thinking of? Simpsons?
Exactly.
Fair enough, fair enough. It predates almost everything on the list. Thank you for the correction.
December 1989.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. But it's been going on pretty much contiguously.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was funny because they had Ika Darville, who was in Jessica Jones. He was the RPM Red Ranger, and he was talking about how he thought he was going to be like the last Red Ranger. Because at that point, they were shutting down production. There was a year off. Saban bought it and brought it back, whatever. But for a property to last that long, and here we are looking at a list where most things are, you know, 30 issues or under, and that 30 issues is high sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's we're in a day and age where stories can continue. You can have diehard fan bases of an incredible diversity in age, mindset, religion, nationality, etc. For one thing, and if you're hitting whatever that magic chord is to make that property work for so long so well, you can have success. But and it's funny because it's a show about superheroes that are heroic, that are doing the right thing, that have the lesson of the day, that sort of a thing, the morals and stuff, that if you go back to the old Saturday morning cartoons of Shazam or Captain Marvel, Isis, the other stuff, Super Friends even, that's the sort of stories and parables you were getting told compared to these days where it's hero on hero fighting. So I think there are lessons to be learned from outside of comics that could be applied to this and make it work. And, you know, I'm still seeing the potential for once they've really gotten solidified their comfort level and the sales and stuff for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, for them to branch out to other teams. Just like we've got with Doctor Who and the various Doctors or whatnot. This is a franchise that if they can successfully tap into the audience that is most definitely out there, they can support many titles and do it well.
If and when that happens, do you think they'll go chronologically, or do you think the next one would be the current group?
I don't think they'd go chronologically. I don't necessarily think they'd go to the current group.
Okay.
I would go based on what is perceived to be the next most popular team.
Yeah.
And there's half a dozen different ones it could be.
Yeah.
But I would start by doing a series of mini-series. A quick adventure for various teams to where you can be cycling through those, engage what's working and what's not. They've got a new action figure series that's come out that I've started getting. I got the exclusive. I mentioned that at Comic-Con.
Yep.
I've since gotten the rest of series one, and that included some of the Ninja Storm characters, and that was from season 11 or 12 or something. So if they're doing that early on, now the reason they did that is it's got to build a fig to get the parts for the Megazord. Three characters get you the Megazord, so you got a full Megazord in the first wave. That's why they did it. But again, we could see a Power Rangers, you know, Ninja Storm series, you know, or some such easily. And again, I think there's an audience for that.
Yeah.
Certainly as much or more so than, say, some of those Marvel titles we were talking about that were under the 20,000 range.
Yep, and just as a quick kind of back note, as far as properties that exist that long, and have been fairly continuous, the Turtles still on this list.
Absolutely, which again has a Power Ranger connection.
Yep, and the one that hasn't been 100% continuous, but really almost has, G.I. Joe.
That one's interesting because it's had a long history in comics, in television. I think even direct-to-video type stuff. And I think it's had a couple of different takes, and not reboots, but retoolings.
Mm-hmm.
But you could definitely argue the same case with Ninja Turtles as well.
Absolutely. And Joe's interesting because there's two major Joe conventions.
Really?
Actually, yes, there are.
Did not know that.
What's interesting about them is they are completely different. One is what you and I think of as Joes, the animated Joes, the small Joes, the characters we know.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is entirely collected to the collectors of the original doll and all his accessories, the 12-inch Joe.
Oh, the Joe Colton character or whatever.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting with that is that character, I think, was licensed to a company in the UK, became Action Man, which recently had a comic come out.
Yes, it did.
Is that on the list here? I'm not seeing it. It's not. It must have come out either before or after. Was it on last month's list? It might have been on last month's list. It's, again, so many things coming out.
Yeah.
No, it was not on last month's list. I've read it. I've read the second issue, even. I'm not sure what... Maybe it didn't do well enough to get on the list. Be a shame. It was fun. It just goes to show that there are various properties that, to many of us, may have seemed to have died off or gone away, but have their niche following.
Yeah.
You know, again, I had a fun time over the weekend while I was crunching the numbers and working on the article and stuff, just following some of what was going on with the Power Ranger community through YouTube, through Ranger Board, one of the main forums and stuff for it, and just learning a lot about, you know, here's what action figures are coming out. You know, the current Blue Ranger Yoshi has a brother, and he's going to be the next one. That's cool. You know, that kind of stuff. Funny thing is, I've now subscribed to about two or three more YouTube channels as a result of that.
Woohoo!
It's just fun stuff. Again, when I realized Yoshi and his brother have had a YouTube channel for many years.
Really?
Yeah.
Send me the link off air.
I will do that. They have one video that I'll mention real quickly, and it is them showing how to do a backflip. It's basically, if you look for backflip tutorial with Peter and Yoshi Sudarso, Sudarso, you'll see a few minute video that's just a lot of fun on how to do a backflip.
I will say this. What you've said about him at panels and what I've seen from the show and a few interviews I've seen with him, he is a fascinating character and really, I think, great for that show. And I'm excited that it's his brother that's replacing him.
What's funny is I'm becoming more of a fan of his brother than him. I mean, don't get me wrong, Yoshi's awesome. Those two have been doing, again, YouTube videos for a while, and they seem not just brothers, but close, tight guys. I mean, I don't think there's maybe but a year apart between them. They are, you know, that's how I think brothers should act towards each other, that close and that tight or whatever. It's awesome. Because literally, when Yoshi was reading his brother's name, or trying to at this panel, he was breaking down and crying. He was so happy for his brother. It was just awesome. But yeah.
Son's favorite ranger by a mile.
He's just fun.
He is, exactly.
And Coda, the caveman, is the simpler of types, because he's an ancient caveman. His brother, I think, is going to play the smart one on the next season.
Which will be interesting.
And diametrically opposed to what Yoshi's done.
But he's fun. But while he may be, I wouldn't say dumb, more simple.
Not dumb, but simple. Straightforward.
They did that whole thing where, and boy, now we're getting into a weird Power Rangers, where they were like cutting the friendship bonds and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he saved the whole team because they were unable to cut his.
Yeah. He is unencumbered by modern complexities. How about that?
Yeah. And in many ways, just kind of the best human being of the bunch. Not that any of the rest of them aren't good, but he's uniquely, you know, kind of special in that way.
Going back to your comment about how Nightwing has been just all sorts of characters over time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I love about the Super Sentai and the Power Rangers stuff is while you get different Blue Rangers, different Red Rangers, etc., there are certain things that tend to be true of that color Ranger. True tends to be the friend, the buddy, the one you can count on sort of a thing. You know, the Red's the leader, sometimes the fiery hothead, sometimes the new rookie or whatever. But in comics, they don't really think through the character dynamics quite as well sometimes. Because I think the dynamic you get on, say, an Avengers team or an X-Men team or even a Justice League team It's just these are the hot characters. We better throw them into a team.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different style of generating a team for different purposes.
And interestingly, I don't think it works as well.
In the comics? Or in...
In general. Whether it's the comics or anything else, the idea that you just... I was not a huge... I thought the Justice League kind of languished for years from kind of the JLA when it was the main Justice League up until the New 52 when they put them back together. And I feel the Avengers, to some degree, have languished since Disassembled when it no longer was, you know...
The best of the best.
Well, or the group that had always been together. You know, it wasn't, you know, Tony, Thor, Cap. You know, it wasn't that group anymore. When they, you know, when they started adding Spider-Man and Wolverine and whoever the hot character of the day was.
Well, and that's one of the challenges I think the Justice League title is going to have by having two Green Lanterns that are effectively blank slates because they've shown up so little.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten Jessica in the previous volume. We've gotten Simon Baz a little bit in the previous Green Lantern volume. But they're not the iconic Green Lanterns or other characters you would expect to be in the Justice League. So you're going to have people that consider a couple of the characters, yep, they're real Justice Leaguers, and a few others just happen to be on the team.
Well, and again, the fact that the real one is still around hurts. Again, you go back to that JLA run, it was Kyle, but there was no Hal, so we kind of all just accepted it. It was also Wally, because there was no Barry. We just kind of all accepted it.
But how wild is it that that concept is now baked into the book with the new Superman?
Yeah.
The new old Superman or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a certain metatextualness that's almost mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's just comics are at the point where we're getting a lot of new number ones going over the same ground over and over. And in some cases, it's awesome, it's excellent, it's wonderful, I love it. But in other cases, it's, you know, I've seen the first arc of this sort of a title 1,000 times before. You don't need to reset the scene for me. I've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I'd argue we're getting a ton of new number ones, and we aren't going... I would argue that that is what DC even said about Rebirth. We got a ton of these characters, but they were all sort of off.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is kind of go back to, you know, again, Bruce, Clark, Diana, Hal, Barry, you know, that's the Justice League.
That, though, going back to Power Rangers, to almost bring this full circle, mm-hmm. to me is the wonderful difference in schism between the two properties. For it to be the real Justice League, we got to have Bruce, we got to have Barry, we got to have Clark, we got to have Diana, you know, the classic ones. For Power Rangers, they've gotten it down to just about both an art and a science of we need a red, we need a blue, we need a few other color Rangers, we need certain dynamics to happen in the team, but we can kind of mix and match, you know, who are the two that don't get along, who are the ones that are, you know, going to have this relationship, whatever. Rinse, repeat, mix, match, boom, repaint the costumes every season, and let's get going.
Yellow one's almost always there too, right?
Almost always.
Yeah.
Will not be next season.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that they've managed to refresh the property on an annual in Japanese terms with Super Sentai every other year on the Power Rangers stuff with new team, new status quo, new powers, whatever. Yet they're struggling in the comics and needing to reboot, yet keep everything the same. They're, to me, this is one of the things that kind of appealed to me with Overground comics of maybe certain characters outlive their usefulness. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I get the concept. You know, it's hard to keep Batman fresh and interesting, or less so with Batman, but more so with some other mid-level title. You know what I mean? Suicide Squad or Titans or Teen Titans or Nova or, you know, whomever. If you've got to go back to the basics or shake it up and then go back to the basics and then shake it up, you know, whatever. You know, are we keeping these characters around past their sell-by date, if you know what I mean? Because we see the same trends of something will start decently, maybe at the top of the list, maybe not. It'll go down a year or so later. Oh, it's next season, and let's restart the thing. And it's a fumbled restart in many cases. It's a false number one, or it's same old, same old. They really haven't rejuvenated in any way, shape, or form. There's a way to keep the comfortable and the familiar, but the new and the different. I went to a writing seminar once, and they talked about how they swapped out characters in MASH from the original guy who was the head of the camp. That was a
Henry Blake.
Yeah.
They killed him off in a helicopter crash. And that's 40 years ago. That is not a spoiler.
But he was the one who was a doctor, but not a military man.
Exactly. And they brought in the exact opposite.
Exactly. That filled the same story beats, but in a different way.
And was much older. Harry Morgan was a lot older than, I can't remember who played Henry, but yes.
But a fish out of water in one respect, yet, you know, perfect role in a position or whatever in another respect.
Yeah.
And figuring out, how do I take this character out of this team and replace it with somebody who can fill the same narrative function, but in a different enough way that it's not obvious they're fulfilling the same narrative function.
Well, and to be fair to that show, they did it three times. Well, I wouldn't say three times. They did it with three major characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they replaced Larry Lanville with David Ogden Steers.
Yep.
When Burns replaced, or Winchester replaced Burns. And same thing, Wayne Rogers left for Mike Farrell.
Yeah. And all of them were very fluid, smooth replacements. It's as if they had always been that way, kind of. You know what I mean? It fit.
But they were very different, too.
Absolutely. My point
is, they served the same function, but they were different.
Exactly.
And I think that's what I was thinking about with the Avengers. And it's not that you have to have Bruce and Clark and whatever, but they've got to fill the same functions. And they've got to be familiar. Back to that JLA run, like I said, we had at the time Kyle and Wally.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine. The problem with that run at the time, particularly towards the beginning, was we had Clark. The problem is he was this blue energy thing, and it didn't work. That was the odd part. We had Clark. The problem wasn't that we needed someone named Clark.
We didn't have Superman.
We didn't have Superman. Exactly.
But did we need the Superman power set and look, or did we need the Superman the Boy Scout?
Probably more the Boy Scout.
And I think what they were going to find with the current Justice League is, we don't need people with Green Lantern rings.
Yeah.
We need somebody to fit the role of Hal. The I'll charge in to do anything because I'm fearless, or I will, you know,
be a little creative, a little off.
A little off, a little out of the box. I'll get nose to nose with Batman and tell him, you know, I don't agree with you or whatever.
But arguably, they've got a bit of that.
Yeah.
We'll see if it works. I think the fact that Hal's still around is still a problem.
Yes. It's direct comparison versus that's what it was, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And it just, I think, to your point of how they could have gotten a few other people in the almost the Geoff Johns role in terms of guiding the Rebirth initiative, I think there are other places they can look at Marvel and DC outside of comics publishing to learn some very important lessons about storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, again, when you've got a Power Rangers franchise that's 800, maybe 900 episodes long at this point,
yeah,
something to learn from that. They've almost got more Power Rangers episodes out than either Detective or Action have, almost.
Well, they were doing them multiple days a week there for...
Yes.
It was crazy that first season or two, how many they put out.
Yeah, they were doing it daily.
Yeah.
They did like 65 episodes the first season, I think. They're down to about 20 now per season, but still. It's got such a, again, a loyal fan base. I think there are lessons to learn. And, you know, there are a lot of things on this list that the main fan base is coming from outside of comics, which is not a bad thing. I think that's good. The question is, are they, those readers, getting enough other comics and introduced to enough other things that it's worth their trip to the comic store as often as they make it?
Yeah.
If we look at the price points.
Woohoo! $2.99 returned!
It's
thank
still
you, DC.
Only 83 out of the top 300, but it's
a lot more than it was.
Oh, yeah. 27.67%. I want even more of that. I love cheaper prices.
Yep.
Drew and I were just talking the other night. We reviewed Superwoman number one. It'll be on the list next time. On just how much story was packed into 20 pages. So 20 pages, $2.99, you can still tell a heck of a story. Or you can waste a lot of space and tell not much of a story, and maybe, you know, even increase the price to $3.99, like almost two-thirds of the list.
Yeah, I was going to say 61%, and the scarier at $4.99 line keeps growing at over 5%, 16 items.
What were those items, real quick? They were a lot of Marvel titles, Civil War, Civil War Kingpin, All-New Wolverine, Daredevil Punisher, ROM, Captain America, Steve Rogers, first issue, Squadron Supreme. Contest of Champions was an oversized issue.
ROM's not Marvel anymore.
No, that's IDW, yeah. Guardians of Infinity, Archie Comics had Sabrina, and Black Panther again, then we had a few things from IDW. Yeah.
And then the $5.99 books, $6.99 books, and $7.99 books, and reorder on a $12.99 book.
The reorder was the Dark Knight 3 Master Race.
Number 5, the big one.
Yeah. One of the $7.99 books was Legends of Tomorrow, which gives you 4 full-size comics.
Mm-hmm.
Morning Glory is number 50, which I think was oversized, was one of the $5.99 books.
Yeah. You got an X-Files annual also at $7.99.
Yeah. So, I mean, the higher price isn't necessarily bad if they give you the return on the investment.
Yep.
But... you know, we don't need, you know, that many items, like 9% of the list being, you know, over $4 or $5 almost and over.
Yeah.
But they're gonna charge what they can charge. If it works, they'll keep doing it.
That's right.
Looking at the breakdown of issue numbers and stuff, we're unsurprisingly very much
everything's at the bottom.
Everything's you know, less than 12 issues old for the most part, at least 3/4 of it. But that's just the world we live in now.
And the 500 and upper sort of kind of fake.
I'm of two minds of that. On the one hand, I agree. On the other hand, they've gone back to the original numbering, so which we knew they were going to do.
Yes.
You know, it's just I didn't think quite this fast necessarily, but, you know. I don't think the issue number should matter as much as it does, but it does, so I must be wrong. The other thing to just kind of point out real quick is we had potentially somewhere in the neighborhood of, 829,052 units that were underreported because of the returnability. You know, we'll see how this goes. Again, we saw a few cases where the reorders this month more than compensated for the returnability last time. I think in particular it was, again, one or two of the rebirth items where... The Flash Rebirth this time around had reorder activity of over 24,000, yet it was only underreported by about 23,000 last time.
Yep.
So, again, 2 record-breaking, you know, totals for the top 300 in consecutive months. That's awesome. We're at the point where if it wasn't for the returnability, we'd be seeing 9.5 million-ish units for the top 300, which is just staggering. The question is, how much of this is just a short-term blip because of Rebirth and, really because of Rebirth? I mean, Civil War 2.
Yeah, but once Civil War 2 ends, you'll get it all over again with all new, all different this time.
Maybe. I mean, we haven't necessarily seen the high water marks when Marvel does the renumbering. I think Marvel or DC, because it's more titles all at once, is part of it.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've got another couple of months of Rebirth, more titles coming out. So I'm thinking clearly a lot of this is caused by Rebirth, but that doesn't necessarily mean it has to end when that the shininess wears off. Probably will, but it doesn't have to. So. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, Logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.